From the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip. This is episode 400. Wow, that's a lot. Okay, the past 7 years have been an insane journey into the rabbit hole of haunting. This show and this community have helped me through some pretty dark times, and I want to thank you for joining me on the ride. I've made some pretty incredible friends and had some pretty insane experiences in this community. So, to celebrate our 400th episode, we are hosting a giveaway. On today's show, you'll hear Scott Swenson discuss his new book, The 13 Commandments of Haunting, and we're giving away a few copies of that new book. Here's what you need to do. Listen for this line from Scott.
So anybody who knows me knows that I am over the top with...
Got it? Simply email me what Scott is over the top with, and you'll be entered into the giveaway. Email your answer to me by December 29th, which is a week from when this is airing. All right, that's enough for me. 400 episodes, too much for me. We split this interview into two parts, and the second part airs on December 29th. Daryl is handling today's interview while I get ready for our holiday special. Enjoy the show and stay scary.
For those people or for those listeners that don't know who Scott Swenson is, who are you and what kind of experience do you have that we should be listening to you?
Well, my name is Scott Swenson. I am the owner and creative director of Scott Swenson Creative Development. I've been involved with theme park and attractions for 20, almost 30 years. I started my career working in attractions as at Busch Gardens in Williamsburg, Virginia, and then moved on to Busch Gardens in Tampa. I was there for 22 years, and when I left, I was the director of entertainment. I was also part of the team that put together the Hollow Scream event, and was either creative director or producer, or a member of the creative team. My title changed over the years for the first 15 years of that event. So did a lot of theme park haunt. And then, when I left Busch Gardens and formed my own company, I have done a lot of haunted attractions, ranging from small nonprofit haunts to large corporate haunts. And this book, The 13 Commandments of Haunting, was actually kind of an outgrowth of the first podcast, A Scott in the Dark, and it's actually the second book that I've done on haunted attractions or attractions in general. The first one was called Follow the Story. So, I've been in the industry a long time. I've had the opportunity to work both as someone who hires people like me and being a consultant, well, like me. And so I often like to say I'm a storyteller, and my responsibility is to write, produce, direct, train other people to create great stories. And when it comes to the haunt industry, what better way to scare people than to tell them a scary story?
Stories are so important. They're not just in the haunt, in everyday business. So if you can attract somebody with a story, you can get them invested in it. You know, I'd love to go through the book chapter by chapter, but we'll skip a little bit of it. But it is divided into a couple of different sections. And the first one, the first section is part of a philosophy of how to think like a haunter. And you've got a community theater background, and why is that valuable to connect with some of your local community theater?
Well, my background is started in community theater and then went on to professional theater and film and television and video, commercials, whatever. In fact, my training, my bachelor's degree, is in theater with a special focus on acting and directing. But the reason I say in the book to focus on or at least make connections with your local theater companies is we have to recognize that haunted attractions are theater. They're theater you walk through. And I know we all want to think about it's all just about the blood, guts, and gore and the chainsaws. But the truth of the matter is it is a form of theater. We are, you know, as you mentioned, we are telling stories. And when you connect with your local theater, not only does it give you that connection and credibility with that particular side of a market that you may not have thought to tap into, but it also gives you resources, you know, great lighting designers, great audio designers, great scenic designers, actors, directors, writers. So it gives you the opportunity to make your haunt so much more than a booth at a trade show, which just has the coolest animations. It gives you the opportunity to really impact your guests on an emotional level and, I believe, scare the crap out of them.
Yes, that's important. Because in the end, that's what we are trying to do, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we don't do we shouldn't be doing haunts for ourselves, you know, because the ultimate goal is to make the guests feel something, and preferably fear. But fear takes all kinds of subtle different levels. And the more you think about it from a theatrical standpoint, the more you're able to color with all the crayons in the box. But we're certainly able to be more nuanced. And that then in turn, you know, how does that help our wallet? Well, then you can appeal to a much broader demographic. You know, if you're just out there with chainsaws, blood, guts, and gore, then you've nailed that 13-year-old boy demo very, very well. But the more you can expand and expound upon your concept and your fear, then the broader and broader your demographic gets, which means the more people come through your door.
Yeah, that's very important. One of the chapters is entitled, "A Haunt Might Be Seasonal, But Haunting is Year-Round Work." And you talk about the importance of having a haunt awareness, you know, being in haunt awareness mode all year round. And I guess that's important for both the creators and, in the end, the public viewers, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you know, every time I have taught at every single seminar, you know, back when we used to do them live or virtual, once we get into questions, the first question I'm always asked is, how can I be a haunter year round? And my response is, by being a haunter. You are a haunter year round, whether your attraction is open or not. And if you get into that mindset of internally making certain that you're, you know, everyone knows that you continue to build and tweak and, you know, construct and amass new things during the off season. There's in the chapter that you're talking about, there's actually things to look at every season. You know, once the clearance racks come out, what should you be looking for and what should you be buying and amassing so that by the time haunt season comes around, you've got all this stuff that you paid pennies on the dollar for. And if you wait until, you know, August, September, you're going to spend considerably more money on some of the stuff that was in the clearance section right after Easter. So, you know, take a look at those kinds of things. Also, I think it's important from a guest-facing standpoint to keep your brand alive. Find additional ways so that guests can recognize, ooh, this haunt still exists, and they're still doing things that matter. You know, I know that there was a haunt, there was one haunt that used to take their cast and actually they were rented out, so to speak, to go to horror movie premieres throughout the year. And they would show up in the parking lot during the premiere of a local premiere of a horror movie, just to add additional ambiance to the film experience back when we actually went somewhere to see movies.
When we could,
When we could, yeah. And but again, that kept that brand top of mind. Other haunts have tried other holidays where they'll do, you know, there's a bunch doing Christmas right now. There are some that have done Valentine's Day, which I think is super smart to do, you know, scared into each other's arms or whatever that is. But again, throughout the year, that keeps that brand awareness going. If you can't do any of those things, at the very least, keep your social media alive. Don't just post during the haunt season. Post year round so that when the time comes to reopen, guests are already there. You've already got them chomping at the bit to come through your doors. So don't think of haunt or really any seasonal entertainment as seasonal. And this became incredibly apparent when I was still working at Busch Gardens. And we had, you know, when I was, before I became a director, I was the manager of the seasonal events. And we had an event every quarter of the year, a major event every quarter of the year. Now, to most people, they only thought of Christmas at Christmas time and Halloween at Halloween time and summer, you know, the summer concert series during the summer concert series. But we had to think about it year round. And when we did that, we were actually not only able to keep the ball moving forward, so we didn't have to jump on a moving train once we got to the next event, we were also able to find shortcuts and infrastructure that would work for all the different seasons. You know, for haunters who are looking to find a way to do a Christmas event or to do something, you know, over the summer or whatever, if you keep things up and running, you don't have to get them started. And so that was, I know that's not going to work for everybody, but that was certainly the mentality in the theme park world, and it helped us significantly.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Just you know, even as you mentioned, Valentine's Day, if you can't open for Valentine's Day, have your two iconic characters have a little romantic getaway, or have your slasher character come up behind another couple who is having a romantic getaway, something just to keep that going throughout the year. Shopping, though, is also important. You mentioned, you know, the carts. What kind of stuff? It's this other holiday, another big holiday this year, Christmas, and some haunters are celebrating. Some haunters.
I don't know what is this Christmas. I do not understand. No, actually, I am a Christmasaholic. So anybody who knows me knows that I am over the top with Christmas. So what can you buy at Christmas time for a haunt? Is that the question?
Yeah,
there
exactly.
So one of the things that I always love for haunted attractions, and some people think I'm just nuts, but I love tactile things. Again, back when we could actually touch things. Mm-hmm. But as we move forward, so I always say, if you can get old artificial Christmas trees, whether people are throwing them out or you get them on sale or whatever, you line the walls of a dark hallway with the branches from old artificial Christmas trees. And as people go through a dark hall, the moment they put their hands out and touch that, they will recoil. And if you try to find that in August, you're either going to pay premium dollars for it, mm-hmm. or you're not going to be able to find it at all. You know, looking at Valentine's Day, buy a couple of those heart-shaped candy boxes, because there's nothing cooler to have a prop of a heart-shaped candy box that you open to reveal a beating heart, you know, a live human beating heart. At Christmas time, you have a lot of the projector stuff that now has both Halloween and Christmas content. You can usually get that cheaper after Christmas. Mm-hmm. I think getting LED Christmas lights, you know, if you can get, especially now that they have the programmable ones, one of the companies is Twinkly, but you can get those programmable lights. Those aren't just for the Christmas holidays. You can use those, you know, Christmas lights can be used in everything from a mad scientist's lab to fireflies in a jar to, you know, all kinds of different elements. And you get those dirt cheap around the end of the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, because they're trying to clear out all of their stuff so that they can get out, hey, you know, Valentine's Day stuff on January 1st.
Right. Right. Yes, because the Christmas stuff came out on October 5th.
Yes. It's getting earlier and earlier every year. There's this whole other season called summer. And I know lots of people have garages, garage sales, and yard sales. What kind of things would you be looking for at some of those events?
Great places to get those weird, quirky little props. In fact, there's several groups in social media, like on Facebook. Yes, I'm old. I'm on Facebook. But there's several Facebook groups that are the weird finds groups that, you know, show the incredibly odd, quirky things you can find at garage sales, yard sales, the thrift stores, that kind of thing. And then the cool thing about it is when you're looking for props, like I love to just get jars, and because you can always put creepy things in water in a jar, light it from below, and you've got a mad scientist lab. It's just mm-hmm. that simple. You'll always be able to find things like old cutlery, old forks and spoons, which are great when you stick them into a human head. You know, they're pretty incredible. And there's no point in spending the money to get them new because you're just going to gunk them up anyway. So, you know, you might as well save yourself some extra time and get them already gunked up, distressed. There's a patina on them that you can't – it's very expensive to replicate. So you might as well just get them gunked up. You can't imagine the vast volumes of weirdness that you can find when you go to these garage sales. Because again, these are things that have been sitting in people's basements forever, and they finally decide to get rid of them. So take advantage of that. You know, everything from cool old lamps. I love cool old lamps that you can just rewire and put, you know, a flicker bulb into them, and you've got this great piece. I actually have a lamp on my desk that I bought originally for a haunt, but liked it so much that I just kept it on my desk. So it's amazing. Don't underestimate what you can find in those secondhand stores, and keep an eye open year round. The challenge is you have to have storage for it. So you know, find a place to put stuff away. Or, you know, if you're lucky enough to have your haunt year-round, because I know some people just lease it seasonally, but if you're lucky enough to have your haunt up year-round, then you can just buy it, put it in the room that you think it's going to go in, and, you know, and go on.
Yeah, there's one line in the book that I think is just worth the price of admission itself is, you know, you got to figure out your story and your storage early in your year, and you have to find where to store stuff so your spouse doesn't get upset with you. That, I think, is, like I say, worth the price of admission all in itself.
Yeah, that comes up a lot when I talk to people at seminars and trade shows. It's like, yeah, I'd love to do this. I'd love to be able to store all the stuff, but my wife, husband, spouse, partner, whatever, would kick me out of the house because there wouldn't be room for all of us. So
that's where you go find a friend who's got a big shop.
Exactly. Exactly.
It might mean lugging stuff up to the attic a lot, but hey, whatever. Another point that you make within the book, chapter 3, is criticism is a gift. And one of the things you said you have to talk about criticism that you can do things about and criticism that you can't. What happens if you're too tall?
Well, obviously, if you're too tall, there's not a darn thing you can do about it. In fact, I think I actually make the point in the book where I say, you know, I will never play a jockey. I'm 6'4", so there's not a darn thing I can do about that. I learned very early on that taking criticism is a three-step process. First and foremost, open yourself up to all criticism that is out there. Be a dartboard. Let people toss all of their jabs at you. Step 2. Go through, pull out the darts that either don't make sense, you're too tall, or that you can do nothing about, you know. So pull those out. And then the ones that are left, evaluate them. Figure out how you can use them to make yourself better. That's why I mean criticism is a gift, because you can take those things to improve yourself, your haunt, your business, your job, your relationships, whatever. And then the third step, and this is the one most people forget, let it all go. Because the ones that you've sorted through that you can actually make actionable are the ones that are going to come to you when you need them. So I know all too often, and again, I'm pretty emotionally sensitive as well. I've gotten better at it as I've gotten older, but all too often we will focus on that one negative comment that said, your whatever, your haunt, your book, your podcast, whatever, is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And I will fixate on that. When in reality, there's 5 other people who thought it was great, and I will forget those. Well, my suggestion is take this 3-step process. Be aware that everybody is shooting their darts at you. Go through step 2, go through, pick out the darts that you can't do anything about or were just mean-spirited and don't have any content. And then process the other ones. And then finally, let them all go. And the ones that are important will come to you when you need them.
Yeah. Now, what does that mean about giving criticism?
Well, I think it's important that the purpose of – you have to make certain that the purpose of giving criticism is to improve the receiver. There have been times within the industry that some haunts have felt it necessary to criticize other haunts in the same market just for personal gain. To me, that makes absolutely no sense because, let's be honest, in most markets, the guests don't even really realize which haunt is which. They know it's a big, scary place, and they're going to go there. People from Haunt B say Haunt A sucks, and people from Haunt B say Haunt A sucks. Well, guess what? What the guests see is that the haunts suck, and they're not going to go to either one of them. That's just foolish. If you're going to give criticism that can be acted upon. You know, be one of those darts that stays in as opposed to one of the ones that they just throw away without really paying much attention to it. I also think it's important if you – and I know this sounds kind of wimpy, but I think there is method to my madness. If you don't have anything constructive – and that doesn't mean praise. Constructive criticism could be, you know what, I saw what you were trying to do in this room and it didn't quite get there for me. Maybe if you tried this, that's constructive criticism. But to just go at somebody and say, you know what, that first room sucked. What purpose does that serve? You know, and there are those people out there who give criticism to others to make themselves feel better.
Oh, it's all an ego game.
from a receiving standpoint, those are the kinds of ones that you just go, okay, not going to worry about that one, not going to worry about that one. Just pull those out and let them go. So, but I think in giving criticism, make it so that it's criticism that sticks. So it's criticism that is actionable and that they can actually, it will actually help improve them.
Yeah. Now, you've got a whole other chapter in the book, not only criticism, but this one's entitled When the Blood Flows, All Haunts Rise. And in it, you mentioned that you were talking to an HR woman on one of your trips to, I believe it was Tampa. What kind of information did she give you?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, when you're, no matter what level you are working on in the haunt, human resources is incredibly important. You're going to be casting, you're going to be staffing, you're going to be managing large groups of people. And when it comes to the whole HR side, the moment you start dissing someone else as opposed to elevating the industry as a whole, the more difficult it becomes for all of us to find staff, to find cast. And I think it's important to recognize that from a human resources standpoint, they're looking at, you know, the industry as a whole. And we have to continue to elevate our industry because we are competing with a bunch of other things. And, you know, and especially now that 2020 has happened, you know, and may still be happening for a while, we need to make certain that we're doing everything we can to support our industry, and especially from a staffing standpoint.
And that is it for today. From the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip, and this was your Haunt News Briefing. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you catch our shows every Tuesday and Thursday. And if you like this episode, please leave us a review in iTunes and share this episode with a friend. Today's episode was sponsored in part by Gantam Lighting and Controls. It was produced by me, Philip Hernandez, with post-production and editing by David Swope, and music provided by Chris Thomas. And if you want to be part of the conversation, join our Facebook group at Haunters Toolbox. If you have news or a story to report, drop me a line at philip@hauntedattractionnetwork.com. And until next time, everyone, stay scary.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.